Thank you, John, for being here.
Okay. Well, thank you for the invitation. Excuse me. I'm an alcoholic and from a place called Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, and I belong to a group called Agape Group, and my name is John. So I'm excited to be with you. I've got 30 minutes here to talk to you a little bit about and share a little bit about the experiences around prayer and meditation, and I'm very excited to do that. Just to give you a little bit brief background, I celebrated 50 years of sobriety last year. I started two meditation groups over the tenure, and I was 25 years sober before I started meditating. So it's not out of any genius I'm sharing with you today. It was about being cornered in a particular place at 25 years that I needed to be or do something else. And that something else happened to be meditation. But so I'd like to move up into step 11, if I could, just take a few moments to talk about how important it is, you know, to do the steps of the second and third steps, particularly. It's on my heart to share with you a little bit. And that is the foundation in which we will enter into meditation. So if, in fact, we glanced over this idea of making a decision to turn our will and our life over the care of God, our meditation is going to be equally as shallow. There's just no getting around it. It is our willingness, if you like, to really turn our will and our life over to the care of God or care of something else other than ourselves, that we walk into meditation, abandoning ourselves to this God, surrendering to it, and then we can get a great deal of benefit out of meditation. So meditation is something that has interested me for a lot of years. And when I first sat down and meditated silently, I discovered how my mind wandered. It was actually amazing when I wasn't listening to all the noises in the world. And I started to see how my mind just went everywhere and anywhere, and my thoughts were bombarding me. And I didn't really notice it when I'm out in the world doing the things that I was doing, but sitting there in the quiet, I began to see how awkward and how different that experience was. And today I would recognize it different than the way I thought about it when I first started. The way I thought about it is I'm not very good at this meditation thing. Well, it's not for me. So I dismissed it. If I went back then and had a new perspective of it, I would say this: what a wonderful opportunity to clear my mind and to train my mind not to be a dictator commanding what I'm doing, but rather improving the stillness within me. Now, let me go on to explain a little bit. You know, when we come to Alcoholics Anonymous, most of us, and I can identify with this, that I identify with my constructed self, commonly called the ego. It is the self in which I constructed over a journey of a lifetime. And I identified with that person as the only way that I could move through my life. So I looked to external things constantly. And then when I got a little sober, I started recognizing, you know what, I'm going to look at this mental and this emotional thing to see how my inner life was working, only to find out that there was a lot of dysfunction there. And then finally, as I moved into meditation, I found that there's another dimension to a human being, a dimension of consciousness, and which I wasn't used to going to. And matter of fact, when I sat and meditated, I thought I was kind of wasting my time because I wasn't doing something. Again, I didn't recognize that that I was dependent on doing rather than being. And meditation is a sense of being. And how I meditate is I use several different ways of meditating. One is a walking meditation where I become very mindful about the experience I'm having while I'm walking, usually in a state of gratitude. And I enjoy the walk as I appreciate simply living life.
Apologies. John. John should be back in a second. Looks like. Yep. 1 second, John. Are you back? John, you should be able to unmute yourself now.
Yeah, how's that?
Sorry about that. Yep.
Okay, no problem. So I forget exactly where I was at, but it was in a position I've started to recognize that there is a dimension to a human being that isn't identified with the constructed self or the ego, or isn't connected with the external world. And in fact, it isn't gone beyond thought and feeling. And that experience is consciousness. So meditation to me is like stepping into what a Greek phrase would be, kara terra, the boundless territory. And as I began to meditate and I began to train myself to focus my attention on a specific item, I used the word for a mantra called Maranatha, which is an Aramaic prayer phrase meaning come Lord. And I keep repeating that word. And then my mind starts to settle down. It's not that I stop thinking, by the way. Thoughts come and go. But the difference in that is this, that I allow them to come and go. I'm not trying to control them. I'm not trying to hold on to them. I'm not trying to stop them, which could be considered to be control mechanisms. I just allow it to happen. And what I imagine is this, that I am sitting with the creator of the universe at a one-on-one meeting. And that whatever occurs in that meeting is important for me to appreciate and not to expect something other than what is happening. And as a result of all of that, I get a sense of connection, this mystical connection, this dance, that I am something behind all these experiences which I'm talking about, that I am something almost immortal. And then I begin to appreciate what I call today as my sacred identity. You see, many of us in addiction, well, all we can see is our weaknesses and our defects of character. And we're hidden, or at least our sacred identity is hidden from us. Recently, I had an opportunity to talk to a lady out in Seattle, and she was sharing with me her story about her life. And it was horrific childhood, trauma, and witnessed her parents' suicide attempts. And she was on the street at 15 years old. And she moved to Seattle at that age. And now she had three children that are grown up, three daughters. And she said, John, I don't think I have a sacred identity. I don't see it. I said, I can prove it to you. And she kind of put her arms on her waist and said, yeah, well, show me, you know. Defiant, you know, and I said to her, I said, okay, you had three daughters. Did you love them? Oh, she said, I love them. I love them today more than I did back then. They were everything to me. And I said, well, that's wonderful. I said, well, you grew up in a home that was loveless. You didn't experience love in the home. She said, no, that's right. I said, where do you think that love came from? Where all of a sudden did you find that you knew how to love your daughters? And she said, oh my God, John, you're right. I do have a sacred identity. You see, we are so distracted in this world today through noise and identifying with our doings and our havings. We have not really opened up to our sacred identity. And this is what meditation brings about. It opens up, it clears the distractions so that you begin to get some insight into who you really are. Not the false self, which we call the ego, the constructed self. We're something beyond that. We are something actually greater than that. It's not because of any genius that we have. It's because we were gifted by this sacred identity. And this is what I think really speaks to the second step. It talks about being restored. Being restored to what? Being restored to our sacred identity. And how we're searching and trying to find that identity is not through learning more, not doing more, It is by listening. It is giving witness to the mystical experience of silence. So to me, meditation is necessary to move me into a place where I begin to see my goodness, that I can love, I can be kind, I can be generous, I can be tolerant, I can care. All the things that a human being desires to belong and be connected with is already there. I don't have to go and find it. I don't have to go and buy it. I don't have to go and learn about it. It's been gifted to me. But I didn't see that prior to meditating. So friends, what I wanted to introduce you to is this idea that God is indwelling in each of us. Whether you believe in God or not, it doesn't matter. You can't deny that there's something internal that is beautiful, that is something that we know what good and bad actually are. Even though we may behave in a particular way, we recognize at a deeper level what we're doing is inconsistent with our values. And the more prominent this becomes in our life, the more we see and identify with this sacred identity, what you'll find is the behaviors change automatically. So if you're a kind and generous person and you recognize that in you and it becomes part of your self-image, what you'll do automatically is operate on a behavioral level of love and kindness. There's no work to be done here. There's no effort in a sense that I got to try harder and be more disciplined. I got to correct my weaknesses. There's none of that. I have found in my experience that none of that is true. What is true is the allowing, the surrendering, the abandoning, so that I can have some insight to the complexity of the human mystery. You see, friends, it's easy to identify with external things, what we're doing. It's easy because there's weight to it. There's color to it. You can touch it. A little more subjective is our thought and feeling processes within ourselves, which is a little more complicated to identify. And lastly, this mystical experience. This mystical experience that can change hearts and minds. And it is available to us, not by buying more books, by the way, by simply being who you are and ready to go and challenge yourself through silence, through the initial upset to realize that your mind isn't what you thought it was. It's a distractor at times. Sometimes our thinking betrays us. And through meditation, we begin to tame these wild wanderings of the mind. Also, meditation brings you to the present moment. It is something that as a human being, this is where the joy of living is. It's in the present moment. It's not trying to fix the past, or it's not trying to elevate yourself in some sense. It's really about being present. And meditation brings you to the present moment. You know, for years I heard this expression that, you know, steps 10, 11, or 12 are maintenance steps. And today I would say, I would argue that point. They're not maintenance steps, friends. They're not. You're going to be catapulted in a new dimension. And it is a whole new experience. And it's an experience that you really can't know what to expect because it's beyond language. Language doesn't have the ability to communicate to another human being what this is like. It is a whole brand new experience that's beyond language. Friends, the other thing I want to point out in meditation, there's no way you can do it wrong. It's not about doing something right. See, we get those judgments from our mental ability. This is, am I doing it right? Or am I not doing it right? I'm not getting anything out of it. That's all mental. And meditation is beyond the mental. So you can't do this wrong. You could just sit and be restful in the hands of God. So how do we do that? Well, listen, if you can sit down for one moment in a day, for 1 minute, and start that way, everybody has a minute. Everybody can sit down and be with them. to pay attention to the experience which you're about to enter into. Holy ground. That's where we're at. We're in holy ground. And to be able to take that minute and maybe next week work on 2 minutes. And maybe week after 3 minutes. And as we build this meditation muscle, what we get is a whole another ways of thinking about things and being things. Because you'll soon learn that this relationship we have with a higher power is mutual, it's respectful, it's loving, and it's kind. And you begin to see the goodness in which you are. Not that you have to go out and do goodness, you know, but you will automatically, by the way. But it's not an effort to do it. You do it naturally. And you also do it without fear. You know, oftentimes I hear people want to share their experience with other people. Why? Because it keeps them sober. Well, there's more to it than that. We want to be able to share our experience. It's a natural thing for us to do. And we want to be excited about sharing that experience because we have found something that many people on the planet have no idea what we're talking about. So not only have we recovered from addiction, we are placed in a spiritual place that tells us who we really are. So the practice of this is very important. It's not about learning about it. It's not about talking about it. It's about experiencing it. And the same thing that can be said for prayer. Prayer is an experience. I often hear people say, well, let's read a prayer. Well, you don't pray reading. You read through your mental capabilities. That's what reading is. We want to experience prayer. We want to raise our hearts and minds up to this higher power, which many of us call God, and to experience what we're actually requesting or asking or being grateful for, so that we come to understand that there's someone or something that's listening and responding to our prayer. You know, one of the things I've learned about prayer is that I used to pray for things I already had, and I kept waiting to get it. So, you know, again, it is a misunderstanding of who I was. And I'm kind of waiting for God to give me more kindness, more love, and more patience. Oh, God, please give me more patience. And I had evidence to prove that I was impatient, by the way. But it never occurred to me that I already had it. And I needed to practice it rather than ask for it. It's a different way of finding a solution to things that hold us back, things that slow us down. See, meditation is an experience, prayer is an experience. It's an exchange. You know, we may request something, but we also got to believe that we're getting something. And I hear a lot of, I'm sure all of you have heard, well, prayer is in God's time, not my time, and so on. I don't put those kinds of conditions on it because I have no idea what's going on. But what I do know is if I make a request, I believe I'm being responded to, that I'm not just speaking into a bucket, an echo that's coming back into my head. No, there's something about the Kara Terra, that boundless territory, this mystical experience of a human being experiencing something extremely spiritual. There is a dynamic that's happening here. And I believe this more and more every day. You know, my group, the Agape group, and Andy, you're going to have to tell me when my time is up because I've lost track, if you would. But my Agape group is a meditation group. And this is the second meditation group I co-founded. And the essence of the meditation group is not to talk about it. But every week we get together and we actually meditate together and we pray together as a holy unit. This is what was meaning to me, that I didn't want to talk about it anymore. I didn't want to learn about meditation. I didn't want to learn about prayer. I already knew enough. What I wanted to do is to experience with like-minded people every week so that we can raise our hearts and minds up to this idea of who we truly are. Now, friends, if we don't do this, this is entirely up to you whether you do it or you don't do it. But if we don't do it, what we're reduced to is our ego, making sense of the world, instant judging, self-criticism. Does anybody have an inner critic? Do you listen to the inner critic as if it was the God? And many of us do, because we have no other alternative. There's no other relationship we have that's available to us other than the inner critic. Now, the inner critic is an interesting topic because it's really about a voice in our head that is intended to mentor us. But because of the way we respond to the inner critic and have a relationship with him, it becomes a harsh driver of every mistake we've ever made, every bad judgment we've ever made, and pointing its finger at us and saying, you know what, there you go again, there you go again. See, that's the relationship we could have, or we do have, with the inner critic. But there's another relationship in which we can create and participate in, a loving relationship, a relationship that forgives and has mercy, a relationship that has boundless energy. You see, friends, I believe we're talking about this idea about turning our will and our lives over to the care of God. What does the word will mean? We use it often, but will is subjective. It isn't something that you can go to the store and purchase. It isn't something that really you can go and learn about it. That's unimportant. What each of us have is a will. And I love the definition of the will that I use is a cause. So when I'm using my will to cause something to come into reality, my will is weak and temporary. However, if I turn my will over to God's will, which I believe is the originator, the creator of the universe, who's caused everything to come to form, and if I'm willing to accept that cause, it's like a wind at my back, moving me gently forward so I don't have to do it on my own. I'm being moved. I'm being caused by something far greater than myself. So I'm not limited to my weak self-will. I am boundless in the sense that I have the original cause of God moving me in a direction. You see, this is what occurs to me in my meditations. And it occurs to me, I believe it's the basic truth, the ancient wisdom in which you and I carry in us, which we seldom use because we're so related and identified with, you guessed it, the ego. See, there's something extraordinary that we can access. Wilson calls it intuition, intuitive thought. It exists. It isn't something that's imagined. So how do we access it? Well, we have to open ourselves up to it. We have to lessen the noise in our life. We have to begin to listen quietly to the general, the subjective nudging of the spirit moving within us to move forward in our lives. This is what 11th step means to me. It means a whole different view of who I am and what am I to do in my life. See, there's also another thing I've learned and I want to share with you for a moment. And that is sometimes I step into spiritual superstition. I come to think that God is going to do something for me, which I am responsible for doing. And there's confusion around that at times in my life. So if I'm sitting waiting, that's a clue to me that, wait a minute, I should be in action about something. It's not that God is withholding, that I need to be responsible for the actions to take. So there is a mutual dance, a mystical dance that's happening here that is not always clear to me. And sometimes it's very confusing, but I do get signals from the universe. So if I get a sense that nothing is occurring, I know I need to be in action. And that God has already given me the things that I've requested and hoped for. Friends, I've spent a lot of time and work in the 12-step program because I believed in it. And I'm just so excited to share this information with you. Hopefully it's been valuable to you. And if it's not, just put it on the back of your head. Maybe one day it might be. See, I come here to share an experience with you. It is not the experience, and it may be not your experience. Honor your experience. You don't have to compare what I've experienced with what you're experiencing. Know that you are unique, and your voice is important in this world. And it's made up of your very specific experiences and your interpretations in life. So honor that. Honor it. Don't be afraid of it. Don't try to change it. Honor it. And you'll begin to see what the sacred identity is really about for you and how you can manifest it in your life.
Excuse me, John. You have 5 minutes to go, please. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I'm glad you said that, Andy. I could go on for hours. So I want to tell you that I'm writing, I just finished writing a book. And just finished writing a book in my community. And it's not about what we're talking about today, but it's about how to manage our thoughts and emotions in a way that we can enjoy a life worth living. And I think my God is causing me to do this, to bring to bear what may help somebody who is in recovery, in mature recovery, who are still crippled in a sense emotionally and mentally through destructive thinking and what is called a feeling thought cycle. And I'm excited to share that with you. I'm excited because these are the tools I use to help regulate my emotional and mental well-being. And I believe it's all being supported on a spiritual level. So friends, thank you very much for your generous listening. I look forward to the breakout room. I guess I'm going to be part of the breakout room, so I'm looking forward to that. And I offer you my blessings.